Are you going to talk in like a wacky radio voice? I know it's all news DC radio, but
it was 20-09.
We're back.
Hi, I'm WTOP Entertainment Editor Jason Fraley, and I'm here with the one who I'm trying not to let make me laugh right now after her big radio voice impression, Emma Stone, star of La La Land. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Your movie knocked me out. It was awesome. You know, one of my favorite scenes was the coffee stand, and you have the jacket on. Did you have a sort of similar thing, you know, before Easy A, before Superbad, back then when you were a no-name, did you ever have any embarrassing coffee on the shirt kind of a story for an audition?
I don't know if it was as specific as the coffee down the shirt situation. I've been trying to remember, you know, like my horrible audition stories because people are asking about bad audition stories for this movie. And there's only a few that really stand out. What stands out for me more than anything is the periods of not getting auditions, like the periods of really being ignored and like going on a bunch of auditions and, you know, getting rejected from all of those. And then just like no one's calling you. No one wants you to come in. That was so brutal. That was probably the most brutal part, is that feeling of like not even getting the chance.
Was there a moment where, you know, in the movie that you, there's a point where you sort of give up and you go back to the hometown? Was there ever a moment where it was close to that for you?
There were moments where I really felt like it's time to give up, but then never actually could bring myself to like get in the car and go home. I still know the feeling.
What was your saving grace? Because in the movie, it's the Ryan Gosling car horn, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
Annoying long car horn. What would that be for you?
I really remember a moment when I was like, because I moved when I was 15, and my mom was out there with me for periods of it, and there was one time where I was just like crying on the floor of the apartment that we were renting, and I was like, I can't do it anymore, I can't do it. And she was excited, basically. She was like, ready to go home?
Right.
And I was like, no, I also can't do that. No, I can't go home. No, I have to keep going. But it was almost like anyone saying like, all right, well, then you should just go home.
Right.
Was sort of my car horn, I guess, because that was the thing I just could not do and really faced with it.
Isn't that the crazy? It's almost like, it's like the people that love you the most are they don't want to see you get hurt.
They don't want to see you get your heart broken.
Yeah.
I mean, in any situation. So, but they believed in me for sure. Like, they never were like, don't do this, obviously. I moved at 15, so they were incredibly supportive, but it was,
If there's other people that are sort of, you know, in that space now, other actresses or filmmakers, you know, whatever, how might the signature song lyrics, you know, here's to the ones who dream.
Yeah.
Talk about how sort of, you know, that's going to be, your voice is going to be playing in their head, those lyrics.
Geez, I'm sorry. Well, the lyrics, I understand.
Yeah. But, you know, how does that song and those lyrics sort of speak to their situation and how it might give them hope?
To all of us, to anyone, I think, that lives a creative life. It's a kind of, it's a sort of insane existence in so many ways. I can't imagine living any other way than getting to be a creative person, but it's also so crazy making a lot of the time. I mean, you're hanging these hopes on sometimes things outside of you, or you're creating things and hoping people respond to them, or how outwardly, quote unquote, successful you are in whatever you're choosing to do, because I think all success is inward anyway, and that's what that I think song is about.
But when you step up and do that audition, you know, a lot of people maybe they didn't get up to Broadway and see you, and it was cabaret.
Yeah.
I think that'll be a pleasant surprise for people to hear you open up and sing.
Oh, yeah. it'll be a surprise of some sort.
it'll be a
whatever adjective they choose.
It'll be a pleasant
surprise. Oh, man.
But yeah, no, one of my favorite scenes, too, is when you guys are in the planetarium and you go up into the stars. Magical, Rebel Without a Cause, all that stuff. In Birdman, your character, could you do it for me? And you look up.
I'm not going to do it right now.
And you see you floating in the stars. What would that Birdman character think as she's watching Ryan and Emma go into the stars in that moment in that movie?
I don't know. I think she'd probably be pretty cynical about it.
Talk about working with, because there's long single takes in both of them. Talk about working with directing styles of Alejandro Iñárritu and Damien Chazelle.
Well, I think both of them have like incredibly clear visions. They're obviously both auteurs, so they're writing and directing their own stuff. I mean, there were a lot of those kind of single take feelings in La La Land as well, like, you know, long single takes that were choreographed and we rehearsed for a long time. And both movies have to do with actors in some way. So aside from all of those comparisons, they're totally different in terms of personality. equally passionate, but just very different guys. And although I think they'd get along very, very well.
Working with Ryan Gosling.
Yeah.
Because I know you guys have history that goes back in Crazy Stupid Love. Yeah. And all that. What's that chemistry like for you guys? Especially in that scene where that, you know, you have that argument at, in the green light, you know? I was amazed at how real that felt, how it sort of ratchets up and you're both like kind of talking past each other and that it felt real.
There's a very nice thing that Damien and the other directors we've worked with have been open to, which is we really love to improvise. So it's, I mean, I think it helps when you, from the very beginning, from our first audition for Crazy Stupid Love, they had us improvise. So we sort of, you very quickly get to know who you're working with, how generous they are, how much they're willing to play around with you or go to these kind of extreme places or not. Yeah. And I think we both have a similar love for that and clicked in that way. So we were able to utilize some of that in this.
Do you in real life geek out about like your character? Like that's the window that they were in Casablanca. Do you have a similar passion for the old flicks?
Yeah, I do. I do. I don't know. I'm not as probably knowledgeable about the locations throughout LA or anything, but there's some, I definitely get overly emotional about certain nostalgic things.
Well, I think this movie's gonna make a lot of us nostalgic, but it also feels entirely fresh. So
good.
Well done. Great. See you at the Oscars.
Oh, God.
Emma Stone on WTOP.
Thank you so much.
Hi, I'm WTOP Entertainment Editor Jason Fraley, and I'm here with the one and only Damien Chazelle, who's the director and writer of La La Land. Obviously, we all love Whiplash, but when we're watching this, you can sort of tell this is your two passions, jazz and old movies, man.
You're passionate about something, the way the characters are, and so you want to share that passion. And so, certainly, you know, these were passions I wanted to share, but I also just want to make a case for the, like these forms still being relevant. Yeah. You know, I think especially with musicals, there's like this perception of musicals as just, you know, fake and having nothing to do with reality and just kind of, maybe outdated, you know? And I wanted to make a case for the genre as something that could still be modern and alive and still say something about what it means to be young and you know, chasing your dreams today.
Well, you brought it back. I'm telling you, man.
Thanks.
You're going to shoot through that best musical Golden Globe gate. Let's take back to the beginning of the movie. On the highway. You know, the great, awesome single take shot on the highway. Are you sitting in traffic one day, or is it like a little bit of like Fellini 8½ there, you know, when he gets, floats out of the car and the highway?
You know, it's funny. So, obviously the Fellini scene, 8½ is incredible. But I also remember I grew up on the East Coast and I had this perception in my mind of LA as this, kind of horrible, unlivable place. And a lot of that was informed by movies that I was like growing up watching, one of which was the Michael Douglas movie Falling Down, which begins with a kind of 8½ style traffic jam that he finally walks out of. And man, like that was LA to me. It was just like, it looked kind of hellish. And then I moved to LA, not even really thinking that I was going to stay very long. It's just because I wanted to make movies and, you know, okay, so you try LA. And I fell in love with it and realized there was this whole other magical kind of romantic side to the city. But there still is a lot of traffic. So I wanted to try to kind of start the movie with stuff that we associate with, you know, LA at its worst, and try to build from that to more a love letter to the city.
Is that actually a single take, or are there little illusion masks?
There's two illusion masks that I have to fess up to.
We won't ask where they are.
But thank you. It's very nice of you. But yeah, I mean, it was like one of those things where you know, we had 2 days to shoot it, and so we had to kind of like just basically bane through this number on the freeway, and it was an actual freeway overpass. But it was the whole time, it was kind of like, you know, shooting it and being stressed out that we weren't going to be able to get it, but being also exhilarated and wondering, you know, why can't more traffic jams be like this, you know? Why not?
People at WTOP will agree in D.C., right? Awesome. The fight scene where that builds then sitting in the green light. Vertigo?
It's funny, yeah. I mean, that was like, I remember we were into shooting. We'd already kind of had, you know, it's Ryan Gosling's character's apartment. And, you know, we'd picked the apartment and, you know, and we were getting close to shooting it. And it had these kind of window drapes. And it just kind of occurred to me, like, literally a few days before shooting. And I talked to my DP, Lena Sandgren, about, you know, what this sort of green light kind of coming through would be. And yeah, it was like the certainly the light in Vertigo and also felt a little Wizard of Oz to me, and even Francis Ford Coppola's Dracula, you know, has this incredible green mist, and that kind of green is a color that you saw a lot in old Technicolor movies, and you don't really see anymore. So I thought it might be, I don't know, I just kind of loved it. So I think everyone kind of looked at me like, what the hell are you doing? It's like, are we doing The Matrix or something? But I just kind of
tell them to go watch
through
more old movies.
Exactly.
Yeah, exactly. Also, when you go into some of the musical numbers, you do like a lot of those Gene Kelly musicals and Minnelli and Stanley Donen with like the little logos appearing of you know, the different marquees and things.
Yeah.
Love that superimposed stuff.
Oh, thanks.
But then towards the end, you know, like a lot of those movies like Singing in the Rain or American in Paris, they would have like those big, almost like a surreal, artful, big number before the end.
Yeah. I'm not sure what came first, whether it was this, just this idea of the emotion I wanted at the end of the movie, or this idea of doing a big, like those like dream ballets from those old movies. Certainly on that level, I was like, why don't we do that anymore? Like movies that were kind of Hollywood studio mainstream movies for broad public in like the 50s and 60s used to sometimes every once in a while just kind of stop the main story and like go into just pure music, really. And there was something so bracing and just kind of audacious about that idea. So anyway, I'm not sure exactly, you know, how it first formulated in my mind, but it was very early on. Like the earliest drafts of the script ended exactly that way. It was an attempt to sort of do a version of that, but about this very specific emotion that we were trying to achieve at the end of the movie.
Ryan and Emma, casting them, what was that process like? Were they in your mind when you were writing it the whole time?
Basically, the process was like I just got insanely lucky. It was because I first started writing this in like 2010. And yeah, they were floating in my heads when I was first writing, but it was that kind of thing where I was like, this is probably never gonna happen, you know, forget it, you know. And then it took like 5-6 years to get the movie made, and during that process, I made Whiplash, and towards the end of that process, the script wound up on their laps, and independently, you know, and even at slightly different junctures. And so it just lined up kind of, you know, in a very sort of circuitous way that they were able to do it, wanted to do it together. They had this built-in chemistry, but just individually as well, I just think they're two of the greatest actors around right now.
Totally. You mentioned Whiplash. Watching Whiplash, I remember there was a lot of those staccato images, like boom, 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 like a cymbal or a drumstick. And I noticed that some in this too. Mm-hmm. I think it was maybe he puts like a record player down or something. You have some of those like 3-beat salvo kind of a things. You're building your little, you know, auteur legacy. Your early stages of it, but you know, why is that powerful for you?
It's hard to say. I just like the feeling of it. I mean, I have you know, I'm working with the same editor, Tom Cross, who cut Whiplash, and he and I just have a shorthand. So I think it certainly started in Whiplash, and it was that idea of like, how does the world feel like to a jazz musician? You know, and I was a jazz drummer myself, and so there was something about that kind of. Where it's all about rhythm,
right.
You know?
Were you rushing or dragging?
You know, trying to lock right into the tempo, you know? Yeah. But that it was all about, like, the timing and the kineticism of that. You know, I love that you can literally create a sense of music just through editing, even if there's no music on screen. Yeah. That was an idea I love, and it was an idea that was really important to this movie, that even when there was no music on screen, it needed to still feel musical at every moment.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Speaking of Whiplash, I know we get some nice little callbacks with J.K. Simmons there. I thought he was going to do the rushing or dragging. To Ryan Gosling a couple times when he's firing him, but why was it important to get him in there? Because I know he's meant a lot to your career.
Yeah, I mean, on a personal level, I just love the guy. So I would kill to work with him at any moment. But he was like kind enough to. I didn't even really think necessarily that he'd be interested because you know it's a relatively small role. But I just called him up and asked him, hey, is this something at all you would want to kind of you know come down for a couple of days and do? And he just jumped at the idea. And it was Ryan's first day on set was the scene where he plays piano and then gets fired by J.K. And so he joked like, oh, I see what you're up to. You know, you bring your actor from Whiplash and you have him fire me on day one. I get it. Show who's boss.
Yeah. So. I've seen how this movie goes.
Right.
Well, I know we're nearing the end, but one of my favorite gags throughout the whole thing, it's something really small, and I want to know if it was in the script or if you came up with Ryan. The car horn. How he blares it when he rolls up outside her and she knows that it's him. Was that in the script?
That was in the script. It was always a car horn. It was what exactly he did with the car horn, whether he did a sort of pattern with it or... And I think it became just this sort of like... grating, sort of a very stubborn as the character is, sound through me and Ryan talking. And but to me, it was also kind of a funny, like musical device in its own way. Like I like that idea of, you know, even city sounds that would normally be annoying almost serve as little bits of music or melody in the movie. So that was kind of that, and just the fact that I find it kind of hilarious that that this guy is so.
Honestly, what I love about it, and I know you're like a big old movie guy, so I think you've taken new ownership of the car horn for L.A. For a while, it was Faye Dunaway, Chinatown, the head on the wheel, you know, at the end.
Yes, the
it's tragedy, right?
The
Chinatown,
car
L.A.
horn.
Is a dirty, corrupt place. Now with your car horn, L.A. is a bright, vibrant place. Old movies are back again, you know. It's a place to be celebrated. So, yeah, take that one with you.
I'm going to take full credit for that for that idea, too.
Did it on purpose.
Yeah.
Well, anyway, but that's the you know, emotion that we get out of watching your movie. You've taken new ownership of L.A. again and made it a magical place. So, thank you, sir.
Thanks. That was the hope. So, thank you.
Appreciate
I'm thrilled.